This week on Vaticano, discover the story and significance of the Holy Doors in the Jubilee year. Uncover the origins of the timeless Christmas song, Silent Night, and explore some of the most cherished holiday traditions at the Vatican. Vaticano starts now. Pope Francis's visit to the French island of Corsica was warmly welcomed by its residents. Following the official reception, his first event took place at the Congress and Exhibition Center in Ajaccio. There, the Pope presided over the closing session of a Congress on popular religiosity in the Mediterranean. Father Luis El Rachi, the event's organizer, explained that popular piety serves as a means of evangelization within the local church.
The term religiosity shows a transition from paganism to religion, and many church traditions have pagan origins that have been evangelized. The term popular doesn't just mean successful. It refers to something that belongs to the people, often the people of God, who have embraced and promoted the expressions of faith. The Church, in turn, has found elements of the gospel and faith within these popular expressions.
During his remarks, Pope Francis emphasized the importance of popular expressions of faith as a way to connect with secularized communities.
La pratica della pietà popolare attira.
The practice of popular piety attracts and involves people on the threshold of faith, those who are not regular practitioners. Through it, they rediscover their roots and affections, as well as ideals and values that they find meaningful for their lives and society.
Shortly after the initial gathering, the Holy Father visited the Cathedral of Our Lady of the Assumption, where he addressed priests and consecrated individuals. He urged them to listen to and remain close to those who come to the church, so that those who have drifted away from God might find guidance and comfort through their support. Following his remarks, the Pope prayed the Sunday Angelus. Outside the cathedral, a children's choir joined the crowds in singing. The day concluded with a Eucharistic celebration at Place de Austerlitz, where various fraternities from the island gathered to fill the square. The Pope wore rose vestments, used only twice in the liturgical year. One of these occasions is the third Sunday of Advent, known as Gaudete Sunday, which means rejoice in Latin. In his homily, the pontiff urged the faithful to prepare for Christmas with a sense of joyful expectation.
And it's not easy to have joy. Christian joy is not carefree, superficial, or like carnival joy. It's not like that. Rather, it's a joy of the heart, rooted in a firm foundation.
Before departing Ajaccio, the Pope held a brief meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron.
Conversion. As the Church and as disciples, we need to undergo conversion, constant renewal of mind and heart. The Christian is a person who has hope and who waits for Christ. Rather than be defined by the past and the errors and sins committed,
Pope Francis released his message for the 58th World Day of Peace, commemorated annually on January the 1st, with three concrete proposals for people to embark upon a profound journey of hope in the 2025 Jubilee year. According to the Pope, the path towards a true and lasting peace in the world is rooted in the petitions of the Lord's Prayer and requires a desire for change on a personal, cultural, and structural level in order to confront the present state of injustice and inequality. Renewing the appeals for peace of his predecessors, St. John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, and St. Paul VI, the Holy Father called for the development of a new financial framework based on solidarity, the elimination of the death penalty in all nations, and using a fixed percentage of money earmarked for armaments to establish a global fund to sustainably eradicate hunger and promote education in poorer countries.
the Holy Father speaks about the poorer countries. In our time, he says, this must include the conversion of hearts.
If we take to heart these much-needed changes, the Jubilee Year of Grace can serve to set each one of us on a renewed journey of hope, born of the experience of God's unlimited mercy. The Pope wrote in his message on peace, the prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, Jesuit Cardinal Michael Czerny, told journalists that a constant renewal of mind and heart is needed to bring about future changes to improve the lives of the world's most vulnerable.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, has stated that the peak of the war in Gaza is behind us and expressed optimism for a compromise in the coming months. Speaking at a press conference with Aid to the Church in Need, he called on new leaders to reject sectarianism and protect minority rights amidst ongoing Israeli strikes that have killed at least 35 Palestinians. The Patriarch emphasized the long-term challenges of rebuilding Gaza and fostering trust, while highlighting the importance of faith and community in maintaining hope. Pope Francis has urged Italian bankers to prioritize ethical investments that support development and social inclusion over speculative ventures and activities that fuel inequality and conflict. Speaking to delegations from the Italian banking institutes, he emphasized the financial sector's responsibility to foster sustainability and serve human needs. The pontiff called for finance to contribute to a more just and peaceful society, aligning with the upcoming Jubilee of Hope. The European Union's bishops have urged Syria's new leaders to ensure a peaceful transition by rejecting sectarianism and extremism and protecting minority rights. In a statement, they called for the safeguarding of religious sites, provision of humanitarian aid, and the safe return of displaced persons. The bishops expressed hope for stability and supported efforts to rebuild Syria following the ousting of the Assad regime. 20 young people have begun their 5-year roles on the Vatican's International Youth Advisory Body in Rome, receiving personal encouragements from Pope Francis. The diverse group will advise the Holy Father and the Roman Curia on issues affecting youth, drawing on their global experiences to guide the Church's initiatives. Pope Francis urged them to be courageous and committed as they work to create a more inclusive and dynamic future for the Church. Acea Group and Archbishop Rino Fisichella unveiled a new lighting system for St. Peter's Square to celebrate the Jubilee year, using 280 energy-efficient LEDs to illuminate 140 statues. They also introduced 14 water houses around Rome to provide free drinking water and launched the Aqua app to help visitors find water sources. These initiatives enhance the experience for tourists and promote sustainability during the Jubilee celebrations. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Benedictia de Grian for EWTN Vaticano.
Stay tuned. Up next on Vaticano, the story and significance of the Holy Doors in the Jubilee year. As the Jubilee approaches, a growing sense of joy and excitement fills the city of Rome, creating a vibrant, festive atmosphere. This mirrors the celebration's origins, when the sound of the ram's horn, called Jobel in Hebrew, from which the Christian term Jubilee is derived, echoed through the city. The Holy Doors, powerful symbols of the Jubilee and signs of mercy and hope, stand ready to open, inviting everyone to embrace God's love, healing, and hope. But did you know that the very first Holy Door in history wasn't in Rome?
Già abbiamo prima di quella data.
We have a Holy Door at the Basilica of Santa Maria di Colle Maggio in Aquila. where Celestine V was crowned in 1294. A holy door was opened there to commemorate that historic event.
Only 6 years later, the first holy year was announced in Rome.
Allora, correva l'anno 1300, il 22 di febbraio.
It was the year 1300, February the 22nd, solemnity of the Chair of St. Peter, when the Pope Boniface VIII Caetani gave the bull of indiction of the very first jubilee in history.
Che è appunto la trascrizione della bolla di indizione del primo giubileo.
Originally, the jubilee was to be celebrated every 100 years, which was soon reduced to 50, and then to every 25 years. The heart of the holy year became the city of Rome.
I luoghi di pellegrinaggio per eccellenza sono quelli verso le tombe.
The places of pilgrimage par excellence were those to the tombs of the apostles.
Quindi nel 1300, dopo secoli di attesa di un rinnovamento spirituale,
the people of that period sought to see the tomb of St. Peter and were coming to Rome hoping to receive an indulgence.
Verso Roma, sperando di ricevere l'indulgenza.
The idea of the Jubilee year, which is biblical, is related to the forgiveness of sins, to the theme of mercy. You make your pilgrimage to be forgiven.
Si fa un pellegrinaggio per essere perdonati.
And this pilgrimage ends with passing through the holy door.
La prima è quella di San Giovanni Laterano.
The first holy door to be opened in Rome was probably that of St. John in Lateran in the year 1425, followed by that of St. Peter's Basilica, which was opened probably by Sixtus IV in 1475.
Aprì la porta santa.
EWTN Vatican correspondent Magdalena Wolinska-Ridi had the privilege of exploring the hidden archives of the Fabrica di San Pietro, nestled beneath the roof of St. Peter's Basilica. There she admired the only surviving iconographies from that era and accessed invaluable information on every jubilee from the year 1500 until today.
Here is the first map depicting the Vatican area, featuring the ancient Circus of Nero. The obelisk stands here, along with the ancient sacristy of St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican.
Mentre andando ancora in avanti, troviamo.
You can also see the layout of the old basilica alongside the outlines of the new basilica that began to take shape in the early 1500s.
Is this the ancient holy door here? Are these porticos?
We? Esa.
Here, exactly, we are practically here.
Here are five doors, and this one is the sixth.
You have to remember that it was not the present basilica, but the ancient one and the portico. That sixth door, a little door used to be called the Porta Parvula, or the Golden Door, and the little door was used only for the Holy Year. So, you would enter the northern aisle of the ancient basilica.
In 1500, Pope Alexander VI Borgia established that the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica would be the first to open, setting a lasting precedent for all others to follow. Traditionally, each Holy Door remains sealed until the next Jubilee. The current bronze door, featuring two leaves, was added in the Holy Year of 1950. St. Peter's Holy Door is perfectly aligned with the 1700-year-old Constantinian Basilica, preserving its historic placement. Following centuries-old tradition, the four holy doors of Rome's major basilicas are opened each jubilee year. This time, Pope Francis will personally open only one of these four, the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica. However, fulfilling his long-held desire, he will also inaugurate a fifth, a special holy door located inside a Roman prison, aiming to extend this sacred tradition to the entire world.
Opening a holy door here in Rebibbia means opening a holy door in all the prisons of the world. Let us remember that this is not just for Italy. The Jubilee is on an international level, and so this celebration, this opening, becomes an effort to open a door and bring hope to millions of inmates.
Focused since the very beginning of his pontificate on the weakest and the marginalized, Pope Francis desired to offer the prisoners in this way a concrete sign of closeness.
Pope Francis has the ability to reach everyone's heart in a very direct and authentic way. So it's a message of closeness, of love, solidarity, but also of understanding of what are the difficulties that characterize a confined community like the prison. And it is not by chance that this is the Jubilee of Hope.
This Jubilee is designed to be a source of hope and strength, a ray of light for mankind in this world filled with suffering and wars. Silent Night is one of the most popular Christmas carols in the world. In 2018, Pope Francis revealed that it's his number one song.
Saint Augustine once said, "He who sings prays twice." So where words come to an end, music comes in. And where music doesn't quite get anywhere, words can help again.
Johannes Zeinler works as a musicologist at the University of Music and Performing Arts in Vienna. Like many musicians, he has a special connection to Silent Night.
Silent Night is by far the most emotional song that I have to play as a musician in the entire liturgical year. For me personally, there's no Christmas without Silent Night. It's also somehow the highlight of the Christmas liturgy. You actually save it until the end of the Mass.
Silent Night is not only Pope Francis's favorite Christmas carol, but is famous around the world and has already been translated into about 300 languages. Here, in this small town in Austria, it was played for the first time at Christmas in 1818.
This place is very special because the St. Nicholas Church was here, where the song Silent Night was sung for the first time.
The original St. Nicholas Church was demolished in 1910 after severe flood damage and rebuilt elsewhere. The Silent Night Chapel was built on the hill that was created from the rubble of the original church. Josef Bruckmoser and his Silent Night Society look after the legacy of the popular Christmas carol.
Why don't you take us back to the night when the song was played for the first time here? What happened there?
We don't know exactly what happened there, but it is fact that somehow the organ wasn't working that day, and that's why Joseph Moore and Francis Xavier Gruber wrote this song together. Joseph Moore had written the lyrics 2 years earlier in Maria Farr, and so he went to the schoolteacher, Franz Xaver Gruber, and said, "Can't you create a nice melody for it, so we can sing it tonight?" It wasn't very common back then to play the guitar in church. On the contrary, it was frowned upon because the guitar was seen as a secular instrument.
Thank you. 200 years later, Oberndorf is still proud to be the birthplace of this song.
I love this song, and I think I could listen to it all my life.
Carolina Schink runs the Oberndorf Tourist Office and organizes an Advent market every year, which takes place from November until Christmas Eve. Around 60,000 visitors come to the small town every year.
We have a lot of international guests, many Americans, New Zealanders, Australians too, and of course Europeans, mainly Germans. Yes, they just love our Silent Night song. It's a song that connects us and makes us feel good. It's a song of peace. You can just feel that when you listen to it and when you sing it.
Yes, that is the basic message of this song. That with the birth of Jesus Christ, God has come close to us in Jesus. That peace has come and that Jesus is actually born anew in every person, especially when we fulfill the gospel, which is a gospel of peace.
Father Nikolaus Erber is the parish priest of Oberndorf for 22 years now and knows that Silent Night also has a deep theological meaning.
Die Texte der Heiligen Nacht, die, wenn man also Christmette feiert.
When you celebrate Christmas Mass, you can hear that Joseph Moore has summarized the text of the Holy Night in this song. For example, the Isaiah text about the peace that is promised.
Von diesem Frieden, der verheißen ist, und der zweite Lesung ist.
And the second reading says in the letter to Titus, the kindness and generous love of God, our Savior, appeared. That is the background for this song, which he has used in the lyrics.
Silent Night is considered a peace song because it is widespread throughout the Christian world. And there are these stories from the World Wars that on Christmas Eve, the soldiers on the front line stopped shooting and sung Silent Night in the Western world, just as we have the situation in Europe today with Russia's war against Ukraine. This carol is something that will probably play a role there on Christmas Eve.
As the world faces the looming threat of war once more, a small chapel, perched on a small hill in a small Austrian town, stands as a timeless reminder of the true message of Christmas, with a song that has rung out for more than 200 years. Christ the Savior is born.
Christ der Retter ist da.
We'll be back after a short break with a look at Christmas at the Vatican. December the 8th, the nativity scene and tree in St. Peter's Square were solemnly inaugurated. A majestic 29-meter-tall Norway spruce, donated by the community of Ledro in Trentino, Italy, and responsibly harvested according to ecological principles of natural forest regeneration, was presented in the presence of the heads of the Vatican City Governorate and the donating delegations. This year's nativity scene showcases a piece of the Grotto Lagoon from the Friuli-Venezia-Giulia region in Italy, highlighting maritime traditions and authentic lagoon-inspired settings. Continuing tradition, the nativity display is complemented by an exhibition of 100 nativity scenes, renewing its cherished presence in St. Peter's Square once again this year.
This year we have 130 nativity scenes, and there are 21 countries that have brought their own nativity scenes. There's a very beautiful one inside an iron and even inside a shell. Then the Italian nativity scenes, the classic ones, are truly stunning.
We liked the one made by my daughter's school in Orbassano, here in Rome, the most. That's why we came specifically to see it. The others are also beautiful, of course, but for us, the most special one is theirs because it was made by the children.
I've already had the pleasure of exhibiting twice at the 100 nativity scenes in the Vatican. The first experience in 2019 was truly unforgettable. It was such an incredible emotion when Pope Francis arrived and stopped in front of the nativity scene. And why was he so amazed and delighted? Because I had introduced a sort of innovation. By pressing certain buttons, the nativity scenes would come to life. He was as delighted as a child, and for me, it was an immense satisfaction. Christmas is joy and a message, and the nativity scenes embodies that message. We, nativity scene artisans, dedicate ourselves wholeheartedly, not just for a season, but practically 365 days a year, building, creating, and inventing new ideas for the following year.